Are you interested in angels, demons, spirits, ghosts, and monsters? Are you curious about their origins, tales, and influence upon history and on the present day? If so, sit back, relax, and welcome to Southern Demonology, the podcast that explores all of this and more. Hello all, welcome back to another episode of Southern Demonology, and as always, I am your host, JJ. Shining quite a lot, akamashite aminato gozaimasu, or, if you speak English, Happy New Year. I really hope that this coming year is going to be much, much better than the last two, although with the way things are looking, that may not shape up from a public health standpoint, but we can only hope. I'm not going to give too much of a long introduction this time around because I really do want to focus on part two of Christy's amazing interview on Aramaic incantation bowls. It was a really good conversation. If you haven't checked out part one, I highly recommend it. But this time we're actually getting more into the meat of the matter. You know, part one was not only around some of the stumbling blocks that one can face when actually studying any religious belief in more detail, because more things come to light which may have been glossed over in whatever Sunday school or early morning education that you may have received from said religion. And then we actually started to delve more deeply into the incantation bowl themselves, and now she's going to give much more detailed information, especially some of the conundrums that one can face when dealing with Judaism and skull fragments. So I'm going to leave it there. I will let her speak for herself. But anyway, thank you all very much for joining. If you'd like to support us, please go on to our Patreon page, patreon.com/southerndemonology, or join us on Discord. All of those links can be found on southerndemonology.com. And just for a brief little instant to let you know, I have actually revived our Twitter account. Not that there's a whole lot going out there, but if you're not on Facebook or if you don't actually subscribe to our podcast RSS, then you can find all of the updates there about what's happening on the channel. And I have even started a very fledgling Instagram account. Still not really sure what I'm going to do with that yet, but if you would like to, you know, be on the ground floor for when I do start doing stuff with it, please feel free. But anyway, thank you all for joining again, and let's get right on into the conversation with Christy.
And those are really interesting because especially if they're written in Jewish script, like you don't mess with dead bodies, and like why is a Jew writing on a skull?
Like, yeah, you know, exactly.
And in the Berlin Museum, a gentleman named Dan Levine that taught at Southampton for a long time and is like an expert on this. He went and looked at a number of bowls or a number of these objects. Like in Berlin, I know that there are at least two skulls that are used the same way these bowls are. And in, at Penn State, there are fragments of a skull that you really can't read anymore because care wasn't taken, you know, so it's all kinds of messed up and it was in fragments anyway. But yeah, and so it's quite interesting, but like, what is to one make of this, right? And like the bowl that got me into it is what's called a curse bowl. Because the vast majority, like 95% of these bowls are what are called like apotropaic or prophylactic or for guarding or for blessing or for, you know, good outcomes.
Spiritual condoms, right?
Yeah, exactly. And my bowl is a curse wolf. But like, not only that, but it's like human die wolf. Like it's bad, bad, bad. Like,
wow.
Like it is, it's about some dude named Judah. And I don't know who he pissed off, but he pissed off somebody really good. it's like, your tongues swell up and like curse all your stars and planets. Cause like, you know, Zoroastrianism was still big in the area at the time as well. And so they took on like, so much of this is like syncretism and like a melange of like the different beliefs around you. And it didn't, you know, so it all kind of like melds together. And also like when one is attempting to get rid of an illness, it'll say things like, you know, all the demons and Liliths named and unnamed, all the male demons, all the female demons, all the male Liliths, all the female Liliths, and Lilith with the lowercase L is a term in that area for a demon as well. But apparently there's differences in these kinds of demons, but,
yep.
But you're covering all your bases because names matter. Right. And so like, and they'd call out, Bagdana is a popular one to call out. They were, I believe like a Mesopotamian, like, king of the demons or something like that, like some big bad guy. Mm-hmm. And so like, you know, call out like, yo, Bagdana, and like, you cut your shit off, and, you know, and tell your buddies to cut it off too. Like, you know, so just like covering all the bases forever. So, cause if you don't know the name of the entity that's causing problems, like, all right, fine. I'm just gonna call all y'all out. And so I'm gonna get it somewhere, right? Yep. Like whatever you are, I'm gonna find you somewhere. Cause I'm just gonna call all of them out. Yeah. And so like mine is quite interesting because it calls upon, like a god of death, and like it calls upon like this thing called a Yaror demon, which apparently is like something that's like not cited very often. And it's like a big scary, it's like the destroyer or like the devastator or something, or like the destructor is like one of the epithets. Mm-hmm. And so it calls out like Yaror and Mote, like a god of death, and all the spirits that reside in the cemetery, which is very interesting.
I haven't heard that one before now.
That, yeah.
It's interesting.
Yeah. And like, I like how like a lot of the literature I read like will casually mention, and like if you like Wikipedia or something, like, yeah, they're found in homes in here and some in cemeteries. No big deal. Like, no, that's kind of a big deal. Like, you're being, yeah, like, because like there's, I believe in the Babylonian Talmud, and I could be mistaken, I've been wrong once or twice, but it talks about how like there are two ways to be a necromancer, and like one of them is calling the spirit of like the entity to you, and then one of them is like utilizing that spirit to do something for you. And so by having this bowl or this, you know, or this item or whatever, like the skull especially, right, either in the cemetery or from the cemetery, in that way you are utilizing that power, and you're not necessarily calling up that person, but you're still taking that power. And that was part of my argument with like my thesis as well. But I always found that very interesting, because like and it's not something that I've seen referenced a lot, but like the idea with these like demons being bound is that you're binding their power. I'm like, well, why can't you be binding it to use it for your own? Like, yes, you're binding them, but you're not doing it to stop it. You're doing it to redirect their power in a way that you want it to be redirected.
Oh, yeah. In fact, you find that same concept within these Devtera scrolls, which are made by, Ethiopian Orthodox priests that belong to a certain sect of priests, and some of them sing in multiple voices. Some of them are dedicated to creating these types of protection scrolls, but the scroll was very similar. So they use red and black ink, which is inherited from Zoroastrianism with their magical texts. They call out every single demon they can think of, from Shotalai, which is a substitute for Lilith with a small L, which are a race of baby-killing demons. Mm-hmm. You have Barya and Legawan, which are the two snakes that form up Ouroboros. A whole slew of other entities in which they're kind of trying to protect against. But the way that these scrolls are prepared is the priest will ritually sacrifice a goat, skin it, take and some eggs and some alcohol, put it onto a rock, lure a demon, because they're tempted by these objects, capture it within the Seal of Solomon, and then imbue the scroll with the demon's power to funnel God's will.
How fascinating.
And honestly, I mean, this is all just first blush hearing this, because I don't know much about the incantation bowls, but there's a crap ton of similarity there. And yeah. I don't know if it comes from, you know, particular religion, particular practices intermixing, or if a lot of this was just borrowed from the shared environment and kind of passed on, but it would be fascinating to actually dig in and figure that out.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, that's the thing too, like magical papyri and like amulets and stuff from around the same time are found in Israel, no bowls, but written things, and like lead amulets or whatever that are like longer, that have these same formulae, that have these, like the exact wording, the same exact wording. And we know that obviously, cause that's around the time when the Babylonian and the Jerusalem Talmud were being written and being codified. Mm-hmm. And so like, we know for a fact that there was travel and you know, discussion between these two groups. And so like, no, I think that's absolutely fascinating.
Cause you know, a lot of Ethiopic practices were being followed along the Silk Road, and mm-hmm. you have a lot of different cultures kind of coming together. I mean, Arabic, modern Arabic, actually borrows about 60% of its vocabulary from Ge'ez. And you actually find, so one of the things that scrolls often protect against is called Buddha. And yes, that comes directly from Buddha, which is the evil eye. In fact, you find the evil eye referenced even within like Turkish Islamic communities.
The bowls also reference the evil eye. Like it's a huge thing in like, you know, quote unquote, Middle Eastern cultures.
Oh, yeah. Cultures. I mean, that's like one of the biggest things to.
Yeah.
It's just that the Ethiopic just persecuted another, you know, religion in order to make their case.
Right. Well,
anyway, not here or there.
No, that's fascinating because, with the bowls with, you know, like eggshells, for example, found inside of it, like, what does that do? Like, because there's not an egg in it, it's just the eggshell, there's no dried egg, right? It's just the shells. So, like, what are we doing here?
Other thing I was going to ask you about is, so in, you know, the Essenes, the Dead Sea Scrolls, mm-hmm. you have the teacher who, you know, is often making these proclamations, but they kind of believed that it was the corners that would allow a weak spot so that entities could flow into them. So I'm wondering if that also might be a reason why they would put the bowls in the corners, not just to define the room, but also to shore up the places where stuff could leak in. I don't know.
No, that is exactly. Yes. From what I've read, like that's exactly it. Like the corners are the weak spot for some reason. And so like, if you don't find, it's not uncommon to find them in all four corners. Mm-hmm. But there will be at least, if you find one in a house, it will be at a corner. And more rarely it will be, you know, where a bed would go, but that one almost like, I would say 100% will have to do with protection during pregnancy or childbirth. Or someone that was chronically ill in some way, cause it'll mention that, you know, these like attacks have been ongoing. And so that person obviously is bedbound in some way. And therefore can't move, and therefore, you know, that's where the demon gets, right? But no, it's fascinating that you mentioned that. Yeah, like they're found in the corners. And the stand, from what I understand, again, like I haven't kept up on the literature the last like 3 or 4 years, but it's my understanding that the general academic disposition is that one takes the bowl, one goes to the scribe, one says, I need protection against this thing. Scribe writes it out. Sometimes scribe is illiterate. You can tell, like, they didn't, you know, and so
Actually, did you find any like forgeries that were just complete gibberish rather than?
Funny you should mention that. So yes, there are some that it's clear that the scribe was copying the letters, the quote unquote letters, but there's misspellings or whatever. And like, so like, it's obvious that they didn't know how to read or write, but they could copy it. But inherent in the bowls as well is butchus magicae or, you know, or characters. Mm-hmm. And it's basically like rubbish words, like nothing, gibberish. Like, you know, it's like, I'm going to call him, you know, the angel of, you know, Gabriel and Michael and like SKY. Well, this guy, what's the one? It's like, I think it's like, shin yod or something. Like that's not a word. Like it's S Y S Y.
Oh yeah.
That's not a word. And that's not a person.
I mean, in almost every single like different pseudepigraphal book or whatever text that you're dealing with, you'll have the four standard archangels. And then when they try to just make up random magical words for the last three, because they're never agreed upon ever.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
Like, well, but in the bowls, these nonsense words are repeated in different bowls. Like, mm-hmm. And that's what I found interesting. And I was speaking with a professor of mine one time, because sometimes, so it'll be these, like the nonsense words are repeated throughout these different bowls. So clearly they had, like, there was something going on for these same words to be repeated, in mm-hmm. my opinion. But also, there'll be just a repetition of like a certain letter. Like it'll be like Y. And like, usually that, like the Y is short for like, for the
tetragrammaton.
that one.
Yeah, I trust me. I get tripped up on that one all the time.
I just say the yod hey vav hey, because that's just easier. Like, just in my Hebrew class, I said Yahweh one time, and my professor said, "Don't say that." And I said, "Say what?" Because I was just reading the sentence. And he was like, "No, you don't say that. We say Adonai, or we say something else." You know, he's like, you never say the yod hey vav hey.
Well, they even allowed Adonai, because I've been in some places in which you can't even say that. You'd have to say like Adonai. Really? Yeah.
Oh, how funny. No, yeah. It was Adonai, and there's a couple other ones that.
Oh, we I know. Into. Like most of the, Kelohim instead of Elohim. But yeah.
Oh, really? No, we could say Elohim, but we couldn't say Yahweh. And he was like, well, if you say it, if you happen to say it the right way, then the world's going to end. And this is probably about 3 years ago, so like right before the plague. And I was like, well, Professor Reeves, I mean, is that really such a bad thing? And he just looked at me and he was like, keep reading, please.
Oh my gosh. Well, so that, especially since, you know, that the Tetragrammaton is really supposed to be 72 letters, and we have lost what that means after the first temple was destroyed, supposedly. I don't know, but I went to Hebrew classes with a whole bunch of extremely religious Jews, and they would not allow certain words, because I got, and as a result, I got really like kind of cautious about what I call things.
He's so cool. His name is John Reeves. He teaches at UNC Charlotte. And he's amazing. Absolutely amazing. And he's brilliant. But yeah, so like, there are these nonsense words and these like repeated syllables, for seemingly no reason. And, I was speaking with a professor friend of mine, because so the general thought is that, you know, you take it and you have the scribe write something, and then you go home and you bury it and you're done, no problem. But there are some bowls that have been found now, that have been translated, that mention a magician or the magician. And some of them even differentiate between the magician and the scribe. So those aren't necessarily the same thing. Mm. Just like you're not necessarily Jewish if you get an Aramaic bowl. Or you're not necessarily Mandaean if you're the Mandaean bowl, and which I also find interesting.
It just goes to show that there's a marketplace for this stuff. I mean,
right. Well, I mean, but Jews shouldn't be buying these bowls for, you know, from other people, right? Because, true. Right. And Jews especially shouldn't be, you know, using skulls for them either. Mm-hmm. Right.
Oh yeah. I mean, especially since, I mean, after the Second Temple, there, I think this is right, and correct me if I'm wrong, but there were no red heifers anymore. And a red heifer is necessary in order to create the ashes for the ritual of purification. And that's why the corpse touching, how that was such a big no-no. That was the only way to get rid of that contamination. We were just having a discussion on this in our Discord server the other day. And and that's now an inactive rule because there are no red heifers anymore.
Well, yeah, exactly. And like, and it's my understanding that like when there was a red heifer, like they keep, because you only need a little bit of the ash, right? And so like they keep the ashes around, like, because they're so rare. But I remember a few within the last like 10-ish, maybe 15 years, like there was a red heifer born in Israel, and like everybody freaked out and was like, oh shit, now the temple's going to get rebuilt and blah, blah, blah. Like, and of course, you know, that didn't really happen, but that just goes to show, like, you know, like the defilement of the, you know, from the dead is a massive thing. And also like within Second Temple Judaism, it can spread. Like, so you never let anybody die inside your house because they were all built like apartments, and the uncleanliness or whatever, like, will travel through the wall and infect somebody else's house and travel because it's not stopped by those barriers. So if somebody's about to croak, you drag them out into the courtyard and let them die there. Yep. So like, cool. And then you have the people that are designated to come take care of the body, take care of it, and then they'll do their thing and be fine again.
Especially amongst the priests, the Kohen, because they'd have to travel everywhere and they would touch everything. And it was very easy for them to become corpse contaminated as a result.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so,
but yeah, to find skulls, especially amongst the Jewish tradition, is just wild.
Yeah, I saw that and I was like, hang on a second. Like, hold on. So like my theory for some time, and you know, it's easy to sort of cherry pick your, you know, what you read to be like, I was right. So my theory for some time was like, so that the idea is that, you know, nobody did any ritual, nobody did anything. They just like wrote this thing in the bowl and you went home and you buried it, and that's fine, and you're done. Erica Hunter wrote, a scholar named Erica Hunter, she teaches at University College London. And she discussed in one of her articles that she wrote, that she believes that there was something to do with water, like some kind of there was a ritual of some kind, and there was something to do with water. Because like they're all bowls, like you can get lots of things, but and I forget, she was talking about a specific formula that was used, and I can't recall right now. But it necessitates like certain actions that one would take, and like one of them involves like water. And you know, general scholarship is like, no, because the ink would run off and whatever. And she was like, if the ink is dried, because it's not written on there and then fired in a kiln, it's written afterward. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, generally general scholarship was like, no, because the ink would run and whatever. And she was like, I don't see why the ink would have to run unless you're like messing around in it and like mucking it up. Like if you poured some water in there and poured some water out, then I don't see why that's a problem. And my other professor, talking to Shimon Gibson, who also runs the Dig Mount Zion project. And he was like, you know, he's like, you might want to look into something. Like, what if these like repeated words, these nonsense words, like see where they're repeated within these formula? And he's like, you know, could they, you know, because Judaism is sung, right? They had the cantors. And, you know, he's like, in the Jewish ones, at least, like, perhaps this is, you know, this is part of the ritual or part of a, you know, they would sing this in some way or recite something. And like, those nonsense words, those letters are you know, a marker, like, oh yeah, stop, and like do this other thing now, and then go back to reading it and then stop and do this other thing now.
I was like oh man.
And so, and like being in, you know, he's like, you used to do music, didn't you? And I was like, yeah. And he was like, yeah, so why don't you look into that, it might be interesting. I was like, oh. Don't mind if I do. I haven't gotten very far on it at all, by far, I mean at all.
I know how that goes.
And so I quite like that idea. And like, you know, because you could just say, I invoke all the angels named and unnamed, right? It's the same formula as, you know, I condemn all the demons named and unnamed or whatever. Or I invoke, you know, this power, that power, because that's the verbiage in the bowls. Like, but that's not, like, that will be there. But again, those nonsense words or those letters will be there. Like the Y, you know, yeah, like I said, will be, you know, is usually understood as like shorthand for Yahweh. But these other things that are found in so many of the bowls, like there's not really, there's no explanation. Like literally there's just a, you know, a footnote, like this is gibberish. We don't know what this is. Gibberish, gibberish, nothing. I don't know. Like, and so I find that quite interesting. But yeah. And like I said, like there hasn't been, like recently there has been some decent work done on the iconography in the bowls. And that's, like I said, like that's what drew me to the specific bowl I was looking at, and I ultimately presented at the American Academy of Religion in 2015, I think, on James McGrath's panel, who I also met on Reddit randomly when I was doing research for a paper on Doctor Who. And I was reading his book on Doctor Who at the time, Doctor Who and Religion, and I didn't know who he was. And I was just like talking to him like a normal person. And I found out who it was. I was like, oh God, oh no, oh no. And he's like, no, it's cool. Like, call me James. I was like, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. I'm so-. He's like, no, that's cool. It's cool.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Like Reddit's pretty cool, man.
Accurate. That's how we met. So.
Right.
And not so, that I'm special by any means of the word.
But. Oh, whatever. Oh my God. But yeah. And so, so like my bowl was about like a figure in one of the bowls that again is a curse bowl, and you know, like super major, like F you off, you know, F you and die, and then die some more. But my paper was about how it was similar to a figure in what's called the John the Baptist cave, in the Kidron Valley that Shimon and James Tabor excavated in the late 90s, early 2000s. Which is like a whole different thing. I've been working on this like paper about John the Baptist for about a million years. But there's a number of engravings like on the wall inside the cave on the plaster. And one of them is a figure that Shimon argues is John the Baptist. And he wrote a book about it called The Cave of John the Baptist. Mm-hmm. And so my argument was like, okay, like my guy in this bowl is close enough to the guy in the cave. And so if that's the case, what does that mean exactly? And, you know, it, unfortunately, nobody really had any commentary on it, but which is kind of what I was hoping for, you know, and because I was sort of like, just getting into the bowls at that point. And nobody was doing any kind of work on the iconography, really. And so I might have a different reception now. But
actually, so I got one last question for you.
Yes.
Ran over by a good bit. No, because it's just been too fascinating. I couldn't stop, even if I wanted to. It was just too much good stuff. Have you seen images of your bowl or the actual like physical object itself?
Yeah, I've seen images of it. It's from, so the fun part about that is that it's from a private collection, and Sholin Shaked mentioned it, and I can send you the links and stuff if you want to put in the description or whatever, or just for your own amusement. But they mentioned that the bowl is from a private collection, and the collector said that it supposedly comes from Bethany. Really? Yeah, and then of course like Sholin Shaked, who are like the big granddaddies of like this whole thing. Like they're the first ones to like really actually write on it in like, you know, the quote unquote modern era, like 70s, 80s, 90s. And they're the ones that taught Dan Levine, who taught a guy named Barrow now that sort of has taken the lead now that Levine's like pretty much retired basically. Mm-hmm. But yeah. And so they're like, you know, yeah, that's what the collector said, but we think that it's really, you know, there's no reason for us to believe that it's actually from Bethany. We, you know, there's nothing about it to lead us to believe it's from Bethany that differs from these other bowls in Mesopotamia. But I still thought that was quite interesting, you know, and like, so like there's that X-Files part of me that's like, I want to believe. I mean, because like, he's so like, he has like the same like pockmarked like tunic look. Like he has very similar, like the way the head is drawn in the cave, like is very odd. To the point that some people still believe it's like a Roman centurion, like helmet, and mm-hmm. not actually like a face as such. But yeah, and so I'm like, okay. And that's where I got on the whole, like, you know, like maybe if we, you know, you're binding it not so it stops working, but you're binding it so it does work, but it works for you and not whatever it wants to do. Right. Right? And so, and my argument for a bit too, oh hell, like I'll send you a link to the paper too, if anybody's actually cares that much. I'm not that hard to track down, so I'm not really worried about it. If somebody really wants to find me, they're going to find me, and I'm not really concerned. I've had scarier things.
Look, if you can turn the bowl against them, I mean, my God.
There you go. Like, what's up? But yeah, and...
But in looking at like images of these things, have you ever felt like a chill go down your spine? I'm just curious, because I have held these scrolls, and there is just something about them that just chills me to my bone. And I don't know why. I shouldn't be scared of a piece of paper, but there's just something on some of these. And there are ones in which are just complete gibberish. You can tell they're just completely made up. Mm-hmm. They're false, whatever. But there are a few in which just looking at them, nevertheless holding them, is just an otherworldly experience. I was just curious if you ever got any kind of similar vibes off of them.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't had the opportunity to hold them. At the British Museum, you can request to go into the archives with someone and mm-hmm. like look at them. You have to have certain credentials, like depending on what you're trying to do.
Right.
Or you have to have like letters of rec to do it, because it's the British Museum. And, you know, these things are kind of a big deal, because British Museum. But it was actually really cool. Like I had been there before to the BM, but it was before I started my bowl thing. And then after I started it, the next time I went to London, we went to the museum, and I didn't specifically like look up where they were, because I knew they were on display somewhere. But like the first ones that you find are really unassuming when you're walking into like, an area that looks like a library, basically. And they're kind of like down, like on the left, like kind of like at knee level for me. And so I happened to look down, and there was one of them, because again, like they're small, they're really kind of easy to miss.
Mm-hmm.
And I happened to glance down, and there was one that's like on like the cover of one of the books that I was using, and it was on display. And I was just like,
oh, wow.
And I just stopped. I was like, oh my God. And like whoever I was with was like, what? You know, it was like, there was like a big suit of armor like next to it or something. Like, what? And I was like, oh, that? And I was like, no. I was like, that's a bowl. That's a bowl I was telling you about. And so like, yeah, I'm like, that's the closest I've gotten to like being like, you know, like sort of chill, or like, you know, that just like holding, like, oh my God, they're real. Look, that's a thing. And I know what this is. And I know what that's supposed to be. Like, and also that, like, you know, I have imposter, you know, just like anybody that's in academia, I have imposter syndrome, like, you know, out the wazoo. And so I was like, I know a thing.
Like, it's amazing how a small object can excite you so much. And right? I don't mean that in a sexual way. I remember going to the Museum of Fine Arts in Boston, and you know, because we were, you know, intelligent, that was where you had to go for a socially acceptable time out. Anyway, it would normally be boring as ever live in hell. However, there was a small display case filled with old South Arabian seals, and they're normally jewels in which they have all the letters carved into. And I literally could sit there for like an hour and stare at these things, because I'm like, I can read that. I can read some of that. I can read some of that. And it was just awesome. And my friends would look at me like, what the hell are you doing? This is boring. I'm like, well, go then. I'm happy doing this.
Yeah. We'll meet up later. No, like when I finished my undergrad, so I added on another like year or two to my undergrad, because I wanted to go to Chapel Hill and study under Ehrman. Mm-hmm. And Chapel Hill, like, you know, we have to be like more accomplished than I am. Anyway, and so I took French, because like they require you to have a second language. Whereas other schools are getting away from that. But anyway, so I took French. So my last semester of my undergrad was entire. It was a full load. It was four classes. I was working like 50 hours a week at the friggin' Starbucks because I needed health insurance. And I was like taking all, you know, senior level, you know, first year grad student level French classes. Yep. And so it was really fun. Like when we'd watch like films, like, or like there's some film that came out that was in French or something. And so like I was watching it and I was like, yeah, the subtitles say that, but actually what they really meant was this and this and this. And like, I like stop it and like, well, actually what they really said is this, and there's more nuance to it. And so we need to understand that. And like my boyfriend at the time was like, and we met in like a lower level French class. And he's like, okay, that's cool. Can we watch a movie now? And he was like, I'm really proud of you. I'm very, very proud of you. But can we just watch a movie and like chill for a second?
Like, honestly, that's why no one can watch anime with me, because I'm sitting there watching it. And I'm like, oh god, I've written like tons of articles in our Discord just about all the weird stuff that you find. And everyone's like, I don't care. No
one exactly. Yeah, me and my mother was the only one who cared about this. Like, and she could just go, I'm proud of you, honey. And like, yeah, no. Even before she got my mom stroked out about a decade ago, and then turned into Alzheimer's and yada yada, and so that's what happened. But yeah, like, so even before she got sick, she'd be like, I don't know what you said, but it sounds real impressive. I'm proud of you. Thank you, mama.
That, I think that's honestly, in most cases, that's the only acceptable thing that you can
say. Yep. And so I'm like, nobody knows about this. Nobody cares. And so that's why I'm stoked that you asked me to come on, because I'm like, oh, somebody besides me cares about this.
Okay, all right. So this was so much fun. We do have to bring this episode to a close. I may actually have to divide it into two.
Oh.
But we are, if you are open for it, we're going to bring you on, because I know that you've also have done a ton of work on John the Baptist, which, you know, you've alluded to, but I would love to get some more information on that, because especially, you know, Mandean kind of references or associations.
And Dead Sea Scroll references as well.
Let's go.
Let's talk about the Copper Scroll.
Heck yeah. Oh, love the Copper Scroll. It's such good stuff. Dead Sea Scroll is bringing that back in for a little bit. But anyway, thank you so much for your time. This was awesome. I hope everyone got to learn. And especially, I will say this just before we go. You know, I have always heard of these bowls as described as water bowls. And so to find out, to hear that a lot of people were saying, oh yeah, you don't really use water, especially when water is the ultimate sign of chaos, that just kind of blew my mind. So anyway, that's, you know, one of the things that I found so fascinating, but I got to learn a lot. Thank you so much for sharing your wealth of knowledge. It was absolutely awesome. And your phenomenal personality, way the hell funnier than I ever hoped to be. But anyway.
You're awesome. No. Like, now you're really going to like make my ego go out of control. No,
you're freaking awesome. I don't blow sunshine up people's asses for nobody. So there's always a reason. But anyway, thank you again. And I hope you all enjoyed it. Christy is in our Discord. So if you have any particular questions that came up from all of our very talks, please pop on, say hi, ask your questions away. If there's enough, we may just go ahead and create a specialized channel so that you can ask these things. And she will be returning again if she hasn't gotten sick of hearing my voice already. So thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Southern Demonology. Find us online at southerndemonology.com, where you can find all of our social and podcasting links. Also, if you have a moment, please feel free to rate this podcast and leave any encouraging feedbacks that you may have. As always, I am JJ, and it has been a pleasure getting to talk to you today.